Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. We have a great topic to talk about today, considering what's going on in the economy and the market and the shifting priorities in payers and plans and money. As always, I got the insight coming in from Matt Kachansky, retired special agent in charge from the OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director and now our payment integrity director here, and Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the Los Angeles field office and a manager on our SIU team. And, you know, Matt, I want to start with you because this is really kind of on that kind of that director's level discussion and that really high level of managing budgets and people and places and things. And, you know, as a SAC special agent in charge, you had a budget, you had to stay within that budget, whether it be manpower, whether it be travel, whether it be equipment, training, whatever it may be, budget to pay for people to go to training and things of that sort. And even more so at the UPIC, we talk a lot about this, 20 line items for a budget, and you've got to break all of that out. And each thing is its own line item and the complexities of dealing with that. I know a lot of people don't know this. You're only 35 years old, but working for 40 years in government contract and work, it's made you, it's aged you. Wade is only 30, and look what it's done to him. So there are a lot of challenges. And part of that is when we talk about budget cuts or stagnant budgets, which is similar, because a stagnant budget doesn't let you increase the work. It doesn't let you increase people. It doesn't let you necessarily invest in tools, technology, and the like. But you've got to prepare for budget cuts. And from the payer side, you've got to think about budget cuts in the global sense. You've got to think about, does a budget cut also come with reductions in force? Does it come with outsourcing work? Because sometimes bringing in a company like Advise can be a cheaper way to do the same thing. And it does require a lot of moving parts. And, you know, what we're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of payers having budget cuts, and that affects the bottom line. We've brought some people here in recently who were the result of budget cuts from the SIU budget of plans and things of that sort. And it's a very complicated set of moving parts. It's not just the squeaky wheel. And it's not just, you can't just throw money to things. Money does not fix the problem. You can't just say, if I had a budget to hire 5 more investigators, I'm going to be able to achieve this. That's not always the case. And so there's going to be a lot of those moving parts. Some of it could be those work plans, both on the program side, the SIU side. Those moving parts can really affect the way that a plan operates, and it can affect the way an SIU operates. You got to pre-plan for a lot of these things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. At the UPIC, we had, our budget was set every year, but it was so complex. We had to arrange resources throughout the year to meet the different budget parameters and limitations we had. But, looking at, potential budget cuts in, Medicaid or even on the commercial side, and you've got to look at it from several different ways. One is, where are these budget cuts going to be made? Is it going to be made, to the plans, interior in terms of getting rid of people, getting rid of programs, or are they going to be cutting the fee schedule of the providers? Is that where they're going to be targeting these budget cuts? All of those things have to be taken into consideration by the program integrity folks, because where those budget cuts are taking place is going to have a heavy impact on how you have to plan for those things when they occur and what steps you have to take. If they're going to be fee schedule cuts or cutting specific types of procedures because they're not going to be covered anymore, for a program integrity, you've got to figure out, okay, these doctors, they're not going to be able to bill or make as much using these codes, or these codes are going to be uncovered. Where are they going to be making up that revenue? Where are our vulnerable areas where they're going to start billing more so that they don't lose revenue just because there are budget cuts at the plan? They're going to be trying to not have budget cuts themselves. And for the SIU internally, if there's budget cuts, you've got to cut people, or you've got to cut, tools or training or wherever it may be. You've got to plan for those things in terms of where are we going to put are the resources that are left to the most impact. While you can never do more with less, and we'll see that's a Wade, you have to maximize what you can do with what you've got left. You know, so you've got to really look at where is the plan's money going. You know, so we got to put our resources into that. What are some alternative ways we can do our jobs? You know, rather than maybe pay and chase, we put more resources into prepay or, you know, work with enrollment to keep the bad providers out or get them out easier. Those types of things all have to be done when you're planning on having to do your job with less resources. So you really have to focus on where are the budget cuts going to take place and then look to see how you can adjust to those things.
So, you know, Wade, Matt brought up something great, right? He brought up your favorite phrase or your most hated phrase, which is we have to do more with less. And, you know, the example I love is what we just talked about. If you have people on your SIU team and you have an investigator that's working 30 cases and you have a reduction in force or a layoff and you lose three or four investigators, something has to happen to the cases for those investigators. Those cases either have to be re-reviewed for closure or they have to be given out to other people. If you have a team where you have an investigator who's like maxed out at 30, giving them more cases is going to result in them doing less with more, right? So, you know, there comes that point where you have to make a decision about, you know, you can't do more with less. I even would argue you can't even do the same with less, because if you have an investigator with 30 cases and you have someone leave and they're already maxed out at the 30, they're barely going to be hanging on to those 30. So, you know, there are some obviously efficiencies we could, you know, let's talk about that. But, you know, I know you hate that phrase, and I know that you've experienced it when, you know, as an ASAC, even on some of the contract work that you've done here. It's just kind of a general problem where you can't, more with less doesn't exist. And anybody who says you could do more with less, it then requires potentially investments in other things to streamline efficiencies and kind of get that work done.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of, that statement is, it's kind of like a thorn in my side. I agree with you 100%. You can't, it doesn't make sense. You can't do it. It's just like business speak, you know, it doesn't work. But it does mean that you have to like maybe take a different approach or pivot in some ways where you can't just, it can't be business as usual. And it could be that maybe there's some new technology, maybe AI implementation or something like that, that you can try and implement, although a lot of times that's going to cost. So you can't bring on like a new tool of some sort, because that's going to cost and you're already in a deficit of funding. But it's more like if those things are in place and you can just take another look at it as within the back of your mind that we are in a spending deficit or budget issues, however you want to word it. And maybe it's just looking at shifting responsibilities. You know, maybe instead of all the investigators that you have left, if you had to leave, let some go, but instead of them just working the cases the way they have been, maybe, you know, we have certain people on different teams that excel in certain areas, like excel in Excel, like they're wizards with running stuff through Excel. So maybe looking at shifting responsibilities where those guys that are, or girls that are really good with Excel, maybe that's what they focus on instead of working the cases, like everybody having the same responsibilities. That might be a way to appear to do more with less, even though it's still that statement. But I think also maybe the statements of work have to be kind of revisited, and maybe the, you know, the thresholds have to be changed. Maybe if you're looking at ROI, trying to keep the ROI up when you have less to work with, maybe you're not working $1,000 cases. Maybe those are no longer part of the standard operating, you know, we just don't touch anything below whatever X amount of dollars, $5,000. So that time that's spent on a case, it's, as we've talked about before, the same amount of time is spent on a $2,000 case is often as a $30,000 or $50,000 case. So maybe we just have to cut those lower threshold cases and say, we, because of the situation we're in, we just can't work those anymore. And maybe that means changing the statement of work or editing it in some way. But I think that's one way. If you're looking really at ROI, it's the time spent on those low dollar cases. It just doesn't pay out at the end.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because you know one of the things that we ran into, we've seen with some of the work that we do and just the landscape in some of the states, is that you know you enter into a statement of work to run a special investigations unit for a payer, and there's language in there that says you can do X, Y, Z, and then as the contract begins to develop, the state changes a rule that says you can't do this or you can do that. And that changes the landscape because, you know, maybe you were able to do some, you know, maybe we, you know, as a real example, there are some states out there that allowed statistical sampling. And then, you know, the state then changes the rule and says you can no longer do statistical sampling anymore. Where when you had statistical sampling, you could do a sample of 100 records, right? We use RAT stats, we do the minimum data set, we follow the Program Integrity Manual, Chapter 8, we do all the things that we're supposed to do. And then the state comes in and says, no, we changed our mind. We no longer are allowing any of our payers to use statistical sampling as a methodology. You have to use actuals. Well, the problem becomes that when you did statistical sampling with extrapolation, you're going to get a larger dollar amount potentially as an overpayment. Now it's not. And now they're saying, well, okay, you can look at 200 records. So you're increasing the number of records, but you're not potentially increasing what the ROI is going to be, right? 200 records with an error rate, even if it's 100%, if you're looking at E&Ms paying $50, you're at $50 times the 200 records, where if you did a statistical sample, and at $50, your extrapolation could be an error rate of 100% across the universe. And so you have to recalibrate that. Payers, I think, unfortunately, get put into this position where the things that they were doing and the things that they budgeted for, because the states change their requirements for whatever reason, leads to a shift. And so the point that I think, you know, that's a good point that you're making, Wade, is that this is why case reviews on a regular cadence are an important piece of the metric, because doing those case reviews allows you to pre-plan for these potential cutbacks that could occur. It's, you don't really think about it in that sense, right? But if, for example, let's take it back to when you were, you know, a supervisor, you have somebody that retires from your squad and there is no backfill for that position, and that person's retiring and they had a caseload of 20 cases, you need to be able to go back and look at those cases and say, what are we closing? What are we sending off to the UPIC? What are we just closing for nothing? What are we reassigning? So case reviews actually have a collateral effect.
Yeah, and you should at that point have a good idea of what the rest of the squad's caseload looks like. So just for easy comparisons, if everyone has 20 cases, and they're somewhat sorted by value or, you know, importance of keeping them open if it's, you know, patient harm, that whole thing. But they should be categorized as we have to work this versus these are ones that are back burner that we could close. So then right. You basically are going to take the bottom of the totem pole for agents that are still there, and you're probably going to remove a few of those cases, close them, and take the top of the retiring agent, just so that it's not a arbitrary closing of something that's more important, that's more money, that's got more ROI by doing it randomly, as opposed to the supervisor being on top of what all the agents or all the investigators' caseload looks like. So you can really end up closing the ones that are the, you know, potentially the lowest return, whether it be just financial or in criminal cases, convictions, whatever. But if you have a good kind of overview on what everybody's caseload is like, it shouldn't be that hard to figure out which ones you have to close out.
And just to move that into the SIU space, part of that metric also involves an understanding of, do we have to recalibrate our thresholds of cases, right? Because the only way you're going to do more with less is by working lower hanging fruit cases, right? I mean, this is in the early days of the healthcare strike force, right? The original strike force, which started in Miami, it was the lowest hanging of fruit. They would find the highest billers, the dirt lot in Miami and five beneficiary interviews who said, no, I never got this orthotic or I didn't get this right. But, and boom, lowest hanging fruit. It wasn't always the $500 million case. They were doing a lot of cases that were fairly low dollars, but they were quick hits. It's the only way you're going to be able to do more with less is because you lowered the threshold for the quality of the case. It doesn't mean it's not a good case. There's, a difference between a good case and a quality case. You can have 100 really good cases. That's a death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? Because it's a lower quality on the investigative needs and things of that sort.
Yeah, but I would argue also, not saying I disagree with that, but in the SIU world where the ROI is more strictly looking at funds returned as opposed to OI or strike force cases where it's criminal actions or court actions. So hitting those low hanging fruit, you'll get a lot more convictions, but hitting the lower dollar cases in an SIU where you do have to spend all that extra time just for the $2,000, as opposed to maybe you spend more time looking for that $800,000 case or the $500,000 or even $100,000, whatever the parameters are. But the time spent on those is going to get you higher ROI as opposed to the $1,000 cases, the $2,000 case.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's always going to be part of that metric of trying to figure that out, right? At the OIG, ROI wasn't always actual dollars. It's perceived dollars. And no one should ever think that. You know, when a provider gets a criminal conviction and has $1 million restitution order, the $1 million may not be there. It could be an empty judgment, right? ROI could be a little bit less tangible than it is in the SIU space. So yeah. Matt, I want to go to you to kind of close this out, because part of this is, you know, this whole premise of taking a yearly review, or we'll call it a work plan, whatever you want. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about, on the OIG side, we talked about these management implication reports. We talked about unimplemented findings and things of that sort. And we talked about the importance of that in the SIU space. But, you know, part of this is also, it's also a good time during budget constraints to look at your program vulnerabilities and maybe look at your medical policies and take a look and see where there's a misalignment that could exist.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I just remember during COVID, when we were with the UPIC, all of those, a lot of things got waived. A lot of criteria for coverage, a lot of things got waived to allow better and easier access to care. We at the UPIC, we looked at those things and created our plan for data analysis based on those potential vulnerabilities, like the end of the 3-day stay requirement in a hospital before you go into a skilled nursing facility. That was waived. So we built some, data models on that waiver to see, well, who's popping up is taking really big advantage of those things. So that was that type of planning. And that needs to take place, all the time, but especially in a budget cut where you really have to put your resources to where the plan is most vulnerable. Where's the money going? Where are the policies weakest? Where are there a lack of regulations, or there's holes in, there's no edits in place that can stop these things before they're paid? That's where you have to put your data resources and your investigative resources. And the other thing I wanted to bring up that Wade talked about, dropping those $1,000 cases, closing them. There are alternatives to that as well, where, okay, these providers, they got overpaid $1,000. Maybe just send them a letter. Hey, we saw this. You're out of the norm for your peer group. We're going to keep watching you. So please change the way you bill. So then your resources could be on, let's see what they do over the next year. And then you've got knowledge, intent, a bigger overpayment. And that might be a better case a year from now than it is now. And you're not wasting any resources other than putting out a model, a templated letter.
Right. What you're really talking about, it's almost like a shot across the bow. Yeah. Where you let the provider know, I mean, I don't have a better term for it, but it's like you let the provider know, hey, we're letting you know that you are an anomaly, right? You're an outlier to your peers. Here's what we've seen. Here's why we see it. If you continue on this path, well, you're not saying to the provider, hey, knucklehead, quit it. What you're saying is, hey, you're an outlier. continue this, and you're going to be subject to an audit or investigation,
scrutiny, yeah, or whatever it might want to put. Yeah,
whatever it might want to be. It's a little bit like, you know, from the provider side, you know, we always talk about from an internal compliance perspective, know your billings, know your data, the UPICs, Medicare, CMS, OIG, private payers, they all know what you're billing. You should know what you're billing. Being an outlier doesn't inherently mean that you're doing something wrong, bad, malfeasance, none of that. It just means you're an outlier. Be prepared to justify your actions after the fact. So yeah, there are some ways. You know, I think one of the things too, just kind of close this out, that people tend to think about is, well, if you had better tools that can stop this fraud or detect it, you know, if we had a reduction in force and we lost people, we'd be able to make it up with an investment in technology. The answer to that ultimately is that investments in technology will always be there. There's always going to be a need to have the best tools out there. The best tools, by the way, aren't always the flashiest, right? People don't always need all the bells and whistles. Sometimes they just need some basic data analytics to be able to do what they need to do. But there's an important piece of that, that if you're going to reduce your staff and you're going to bring in that technology, your technology has to be vetted, that you know it's going to work. It's going to get you the things that you need it to do. And there's a cost for that. And the cost for the replacement of people might exceed the cost of the people. And so you have to have that balance of, is the tool that we're looking to get going to be the result of what we need? Is it getting us the answer that we need? So it's a very fine line, you know, we're seeing it. We're seeing a lot of movement. Plans are cutting back on staff. There's reductions in force. There's, you know, we're seeing that. There's a huge glut of qualified people on the market right now. You know, we're seeing resumes on nearly a daily basis. I'm getting unsolicited resumes on almost a daily basis from people that worked at CMS, for example, who had lost their jobs and things of that sort. So there are tons of qualified people out there. The problem is there may not be budgets to be able to support what these people are expertise, you know, what their expertise is. So it becomes a challenge. But, you know, the takeaways are planning will help you with being able to be ready for when that happens, because it's cyclical. There's going to be an instance where the plan that you're with is going to have a budget cut for whatever reason. And there's going to be a need for you to be able to figure out how to recalibrate. So, you know, knowing that you have good technology, knowing that this is going to happen, and having your vulnerabilities addressed as best you can, knowing that you cannot do more with less. I think Wade stays up at night twitching when he hears do more with less, because it is, I know it's one of his favorite.
How many times did you hear that from OIG headquarters?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. It's just not, how do you do more with less? It's just not, I mean, you can only fit so many pounds of poop in the bag. You can't put 10 pounds of poop in a 5-pound bag. You can only put 5 pounds of poop in a 5-pound bag. Anybody who thinks you're going to squeeze in, maybe get 5.5 pounds, but you're not getting 10 pounds in. So yeah, you have to, these are important pieces. And that's why, like, you know, that's why the file case reviews, speaking to your team, understanding what thresholds are, looking at those statements of work and seeing when a change in regulation occurs, how does that affect the statement of work you have with your organization, right? They're statements of work. Payers have them to do business in the state. If it's a Medicaid payer and they want a contract, there's a statement of work that it outlines what the requirements are for payment, SIU, all of that stuff. When there is a change in regulation, does that trigger a change or a review in that statement of work? And how is that going to affect the operational part of payment integrity? So lots of moving parts. You know, it's not just a matter of sitting down at your desk, working a case, and then just being done and moving on. It's, you know, there's always a lot more to it. So we're going to keep up with looking at these things. We discuss this internally all the time. We discuss this with not only our payer clients, we discuss it in the industry, LinkedIn. We talk about this all the time. These are hot topics right now, because you see, it's not even so much about, oh, this provider was billing for skin substitutes. It's this provider was billing for skin substitutes. How are we going to have the staff to investigate it? Yeah. Right. So it's a twofold process. So we're trying to find novel ways ourselves here to do that. You know, it's not that we're doing more with less, but we have, you know, we still have to meet the metrics that the states put on us as the SIU for our outsourced plan. So good stuff. We're going to keep on with it. So keep on keeping on, guys. It's good to see you as always. For those of you that join us every week, we appreciate it as always. Newsletter comes out every Friday. Advise, advizehealth.com. Sign up for that newsletter. LinkedIn Live coming out very soon. Our monthly LinkedIn Lives. We've got a bunch planned through the next 5 or 6 months, I think. So we've got a whole bunch of those. Again, Spotify, YouTube. It's a way you can get caught up on previous weeks of the OIG Roundtable. And as always, we appreciate everybody taking the time. And until next time, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you.